Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Working Girls, the podcast.
Why do you sound so gloomy?
I'm not gloomy, but I am Ginger Minge.
Well, you know, your voice, your low voice is very appropriate.
I was trying
for the news.
Sensual.
I can't believe that our first half of this episode somehow...
Well, let's not say half. It was a half.
Well, it's still a long episode.
A long episode. There's plenty to listen to, but we did have a few difficulties on the technical end of things.
The computer got too close to my ass and just fried.
Yeah, well, we never found it. Basically, we never found it again. It bonded to the other plastics. No, with our fabulous interview with the one and only Daniel Francesi from the television film, or the television film, from the major motion picture Mean Girls, and television's Looking, and various
so many other things.
Uh-huh. We did lose the first portion of our interview with him.
But the juiciness is now. It's about, there's way more fun juice.
Don't worry, you're not missing anything except us talking about the benefits of acai bowls, yes. Right? Well, that's basically what we talked about, yeah. Were all of those things. So you know what? Tuck in. Don't worry, there's plenty more fabulosity in this episode. And if you don't like it, well, there's a new guest next week.
All right, let's pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're back.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, well...
Nature called. We had to answer.
Now, Danny, now, for those who can actually see this video, Danny is now on top. We like that.
Yeah, well, we just wanted to switch things up and give everyone a fair opportunity, you know?
I'm an equal opportunity mounter.
Oh, well, that's good to know. So, where are you originally from, Danny?
I'm originally from Brooklyn. I moved when I was like, my family moved when I was 7 years old to Fort Lauderdale, the suburbs of, and then I stayed here until college, and then I went back to New York and now LA.
Bro, you've just been everywhere.
Yeah, I'm tri-coastal. I'm, you know, East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, but I think I'm coming back here to Florida soon.
You're like Space Ghost, coast to coast.
That's it.
Did you watch that?
I did. You know what I loved about that whole, rejuvenation of the Cartoon Network period was that they just had this whole catalog of Hanna-Barbera and they could do whatever they wanted with it, like Birdman, whatever. They could just like, they were like, yeah, let's start. That's when they started getting really creative with older properties in general.
Well, and it took like two of the things I loved most in life, which were trashy talk shows and cartoons, and kind of rolled it all into one. I was very into it.
Yeah, it was fun. It's totally a fun thing.
What's your favorite cartoon when you were growing up?
I loved Tom and Jerry. When I was a real baby, I loved Mighty Mouse, but I loved Tom and Jerry, I think, and the Looney Tunes, like, so much.
Yeah.
And then Simpsons, I graduated to Simpsons later. I, like, obsessed with the Simpsons.
So I want to break this down for all three of us real quick. Mm-hmm. All right, this is the first question. What's your favorite classic cartoon, and what's your favorite modern cartoon? Okay. You go first, Jimmy.
Okay, so my favorite classic was probably, what was the one that had the big cock in it? The rooster.
I don't think that was the cartoon. No,
the rooster one that had like the chicken hawk one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'll say, yeah.
Foghorn Leghorn. I'll do the quail.
Which was Looney Tunes.
Yeah, I loved that. And then I guess it was modern whenever I was a kid. I loved Rugrats.
So good, and they're rebooting it.
Are they?
They are. And it's the entire original voice cast.
Oh, word.
Now it's more of like the CGI 3D kind of
look.
Oh,
I'm not going to like that.
But it's still them. Like, yeah. It still sounds the same. Okay. So even if it looks
you know what's so disturbing is that Tommy Pickles' parents are supposed to be in their 30s. Those like... strung out, stressed out individuals.
Okay, we'll get to this in just a minute because I have a lot of thoughts on this and I've been thinking about it recently about like perception of age when you're younger.
Oh my God, it's you really think like somebody in their 30s is like really freaking old.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this in a second. Okay, Danny, favorite classic cartoon?
My favorite classic cartoon, if I have to give it to one, it has to be the Looney Tunes. It's so good. My favorite episode of that was when Bugs Bunny becomes the gay hairdresser and he's doing Gossamer's hair, the big red.
I love Gossamer.
And he's like, He's like, monsters lead such interesting lives. Monsters are such interesting people. And he's like painting his nails.
Is that the hairy tooth?
Yeah, yeah, it's like the giant red fur ball.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought it looked like a giant hairy tooth.
It did. It was kind of that shape.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite modern cartoon?
My favorite modern cartoon right now is probably Rick and Morty. I love that show. It's so good.
You like that? I
couldn't get into
it. Listen to me. It took me like a while to get into it, but it's so funny. It's like kind of a ripoff of Back to the Future, but Rick is like a degenerate. And it's for people who are of that 90s generation, it's the best show ever. It has so many referential points. It's so funny, so smart. It just takes a really, like, you have to figure out what's going on. It's like, and if I have to give an honorable mention, it would be Adventure Time. I love Adventure Time.
I do like Adventure Time. Okay, so Jinx Monsoon was, like, on this crusade when we were doing Xanadu together for me to watch Rick and Morty, Adventure Time, and Steven Universe. She's like, they'll change your lives. They're amazing. I really like Steven Universe, mostly because Patti LuPone was in it.
I've never watched that either.
It's good. It took a little bit for me to get into it, but I really enjoyed it. Adventure Time, I think, is so irreverent and stupid and funny. I really like that. But I could not get into Rick and Morty, and I probably
You're missing out. Like, you're missing out. You really have to give it a shot. Like, force yourself. Like, for instance, Game of Thrones, right? Everybody wanted me to get into Game of Thrones. Like, that's all anybody talked about. And I had to watch the pilot episode of Game of Thrones 5 times before I finally, like, understood what was going on. There was so much information and, like, got into it. And then after I got into it, it was like I was obsessed. I needed the whole thing. Like, you have to force yourself to get into Rick and Morty. I wish there was more. And it's just so clever and so funny.
I'll give it another shot just for you. I want you to send me, like, your 2 favorite episodes.
No, you got to watch them in order. The story is a storyline. I know you, and you will love it.
Okay, all right, I will do it. I'll try it again.
There is another one that's kind of similar. It's newer. It's about aliens. I can't remember what the name of it was.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name right now. I saw it too. It's the same writer, and it's
but fantastic. It is really good. I did watch. They have like a the baby is a pupa. And it is the funniest, stupidest little character. It doesn't say anything, but it's so funny. It's kind of like...
Just say pupa again.
Pupa. Ooh. It's kind of like the thing from The Mandalorian. What's it called? The Baby Yoda?
Baby Yoda, the asset,
kind of reminds
me
of like, that cuteness of that.
Okay, I never watched
it. About that has all these aliens that come to Earth, but then like the little kids shrink people and they keep them in like a wall like hamsters.
Yeah.
And there's a whole nother storyline of like a drama going on about all the people that they've captured randomly in the wall.
What is it called? Do we know?
I don't remember.
We'll check with our producers.
Yes.
Oh, we don't have producers. I'm sorry. So somebody asked me. Because
okay,
I feel
so what are you, what, oh, wait, catch our light. Here, hold on, wait, I'll do it.
How do you turn it on?
There we go.
Yeah, tap it. Okay, somebody asked me, I feel left out.
So what is your old school favorite cartoon and then your new school?
Like the both of you, I have to say Looney Tunes. And I know that like, it was either Looney Tunes, Disney, or Mary Melody were like the three.
Yeah,
okay. But, it's called Solar Opposites, I've just been told.
Yes.
All right, so I'll look into that. We'll look up Solar Opposites. But I loved Looney Tunes because of Bugs Bunny. He was the first drag queen I ever saw.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was so groundbreaking, and it was done in such an accessible way for somebody that was my age. Like, I remember watching it going, this is silly, and it's really fun, and I kind of want to do it too.
I never really, like, put Bugs Bunny as a drag queen, because I know that he was, like, considered, like, a boy, but I never, like, gendered...
Yeah.
Bugs Bunny. You know something else that's like kind of crazy if you think about it? Like the skunk, Pepe Le Pew, is that his name?
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about her anymore.
He was kind of like a sexual predator.
No, which is why we don't talk about her anymore. Yeah, no, the Pepe Le Pew has been hashtag canceled.
Really?
Yeah, because he was, you know, very aggressive.
Yeah, he was.
Sexually, yeah.
That's crazy.
The scene that they cut out of the new Space Jam with Pepe Le Pew, like he got fired from the new Space Jam remake, that was supposed to make him have his comeuppance. Like he was supposed to say that the cat had a restraining order against him and he could no longer, because he learned a lesson about consent and all this other stuff, but they still cut him out.
Wow. I haven't watched. Is that even out? The new Space Jam?
No, not yet.
Oh, you just know the inside tea. Oh, well, it won't work.
Well, it's just it's such a double-edged sword too, because you're like, yeah, you don't want to award or reward bad behavior, but right. also if you don't talk about it and put like not a redemptive moment into the story, but more of a teachable moment. Then how do we learn from that yeah. for the future, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the model that was the actress, I don't really know her, but who was playing opposite Pepe Le Pew in that scene is someone who had like a voice in the Me Too movement. So she really felt like this was the perfect thing for her to do to sort of like, you know, sometimes people are just so heavy handed, like, you know, how we can't learn the lessons if you take it all away from us.
Yeah. Exactly. I do agree with that. Like, I do think that it's important that we point out things that have been wrong.
Yeah.
But I also think it's very important that we don't sweep them under the carpet and that we talk about them and that we all learn from them and grow. You know what I mean? Like,
Things change over time. You know, over time, things that were okay when, you know, our parents were kids are not okay now. And things that, you know, that are okay now are probably not going to be okay when, you know, the people that have kids, because I don't have any, when they get grown. Danny, I want to ask some questions about you. I think it's in my other
cartoon.
Oh, go tell me.
Bob's Burgers. I think it's so good. It's so good. And there's so many musical numbers. And like, I can just put on the Bob's Burgers, the playlist on Spotify and just listen to it over and over again. It's funny and it's not dirty. And one of the things that I've noticed about a lot of the more recent adult cartoons is that they are pretty vulgar.
And I love it. I love vulgar.
I love that too. Yeah. But it was also really nice to see after a South Park and a Family Guy and an American Dad and shows like that, that a show like Bob's Burgers could come along and just be an actual old school family sitcom without relying on being aggressive or vulgar or dirty.
My favorite episode of Bob's Burgers is the Halloween one where the crazy blonde girl is like, trapped the kids in the cardboard box because they wouldn't play with her.
Molly Shannon's character, yeah.
It is crazy.
We just have Molly Shannon on everything always. Like, I love her so much. Like, I'm full. Like, I miss her. Like, and she's, I'm 50. Like,
I'm 50 years old.
Do you remember there was a time in, like, the mid to late 90s where it was literally Molly Shannon's world and the rest of us were kind of orbiting around her?
Yes, what a great time. Can we please go back? Take me back.
Yeah, I love her. I love her character. She's been in a couple of things I saw like maybe last year, but I want to know more about you. I want the audience to know more about you because we do have a lot of like young viewers that were probably born.
We're very big in the toddler set.
Yeah, the toddler set. So you have been in a ton of movies. I have a whole list right here. People can go look at your wiki and just see everything, but you've been in movies like Bully, Party Monster, Mean Girls, War of the Worlds, I Spit on Your Grave, a ton more, a ton of TV shows. What is your favorite? We'll get into TV shows. I'm talking about just movies. What is your favorite character that you played in a motion picture?
Oh my goodness. I really loved doing Bully. That was my first movie because I was such a big Larry Clark fan. And I was so excited to be able to work with someone that I was like a fan of on my first thing out the gate as a lead role. Like, I mean, not a lot of people get that opportunity. It was not lost on me that was a blessing. And it was so interesting. The subject was cool. It's a true story about seven kids who murder this kid that bullies them. So it was like meaty. There was stuff to like link into. So I enjoyed that. But I think I had the most fun in this movie, this little movie called Kill Theory. It's like a horror movie about a bunch of college students who are locked in a vacation home with a gun, and this killer is like makes them like kind of battle royale them each other until only one's left.
Oh wow! And I'm gonna have to watch it.
It was really fun. It was super intense. I felt like I leveled up as an actor on that movie, even though it's like, you know, still like a fun horror movie or whatever. There was just things that I had to tap into that I was like, oh, I didn't know I could do these things. And so I enjoyed that as an experience probably the most.
That's kind of an oxymoron to me, though, a fun horror movie. No, horror is not fun.
Well, maybe not to watch, but to film.
Okay, I'll give you that.
You know what I mean? Like exploding glass and like, you know, breaking things and like, you know, a lot of screaming and yelling and shooting fake guns. Like that stuff's really fun.
So it's therapy.
A little bit. It was ironic because a lot of the issues that I had with my protagonist in that movie, I had with a real friend in my life at that time. And one of my other really close friends was also cast in the movie. So like it brought up all this like real kind of things inside me that, you know, that it was a little therapeutic. It was like going to one of those places where you get a sledgehammer and you're allowed to like smash electronics.
I would love to be in a horror movie. I would love to be in like, or like The Walking Dead. I would love to be even just to be like put in zombie, like full on zombie makeup.
Girl, that's us every morning after a gig on our way to the airport.
I'm obsessed with zombies. I want to do it and I want to be killed. I want to be like, you know, how they stab them in the head or something. I think it's so cool. I would love to be a zombie.
Okay, well, hey, everybody's got goals, girl.
It's my career after this one.
I've always wanted to do a horror movie because, like you said, I do think it would be very therapeutic, very fun, something very different for me. But, girl, I don't think I'd ever be able to watch it.
And you're just a scaredy cat.
I am a scaredy cat. I do not like it unless it is Nightmare on Elm Street, like the original series, because I think there was so much humor.
It was campy
and Freddy Krueger was reading bitches before RuPaul. Like, he was funny.
Yeah.
I could get into that, but like, no Friday the 13th for me, no Halloween. Do either of you remember the Mystery Fun House here in Orlando?
No, what is that?
It was like before Universal was a thing, before Disney really kind of took over all of Orlando. It was what people did on the weekends. It was like this overgrown arcade that also had miniature golf and laser tag and all these games. Anyway, they used to do this big Halloween bash every year. And my family was one of the few things we could afford outside of Gatorland. So we all pile up into our van and we would come over to Orlando for Halloween. And I remember I was probably like 5 or 6 years old. And there was this guy, I think this is why I still have issues with my father to this day. We were standing outside getting ready to leave, and there was this guy dressed up as Michael Myers with the mask and the knife and everything. And he started chasing me around the parking lot at me, like 5 or 6 years old. Oh. And my dad just thought it was the funniest thing because I was screaming and crying. And I remember I looked up at him and I said, I hate you. And I don't think I've ever shaken that feeling.
I love being scared. I love to scare people, but my last ex, he did not like to be scared, and I'm like, every time I try to do it, he would just get mad at me. So I didn't get to have that fun. I love to scare people.
Mm-mm, don't scare me. That'll be the last day. you will be a zombie.
My actual job, like, was I did a commercial when I was in second grade. But besides that commercial, my first actual like paid professional acting gig was I was a director in a year-round haunted house in South Florida.
That's really cool.
It was called Silo X, and it was like the theme of it was a nuclear meltdown. So they were able to have it year-round. It wasn't like just ghosts or whatever, but. It was really weird experience, very fun. Like, a lot of people like to act up in haunted houses. And what I didn't realize is, like, you know, it's a big maze, but a lot of the haunted houses have hallways that you could just push someone straight outside through all secret walls that will just open up to get someone out right away from the middle if there's an emergency.
Wow, that's interesting. We're learning all the tea here about haunted houses.
If you want haunted house tea, come to me.
Well, my husband worked at Halloween Horror Nights for years, and the stories that he's told me about the people that come in those places and the things that they do when they don't think anyone can see, it's crazy.
I can imagine.
You don't have to imagine, girl. It is just
in the dark, anything is possible. So, Danny, I have a question. I recently saw Looking on HBO. Binge watched the whole thing. Amazing. Love it, love it, love it. Love your character. Can you tell our audience that hasn't watched it yet, like, about your character, how it feels for you to have portrayed that character? Because you have, like, a very dynamic kind of character that you play.
You know, it was very serendipitous how I got that role. A friend of mine was talking to me, a casting director friend of mine. We were hanging out and smoking weed. And she was like, hey, have you seen Looking? And I was like, nah. And she was like, why? And I'm like, they just don't have guys like me on shows like that. And she was like, well, why don't you be the guy like you on a show like that? And I was like, well, it don't work like that, because if it worked like that, I would just be on every show I want to be on. I'm like, you're a casting director. She's like, I don't know, I'm about manifesting my own destiny, you know? And I was like, huh, you know, kind of like, just like, I guess. She's like, maybe look up the casting director. And I was like, maybe. And so, because I had just come out of the closet or whatever, you know? So like, so I had, you know, the 10th anniversary of Mean Girls was coming around, and man, before that, they had all these like really bad "Where are they nows?" Like, it'd be like, "Where's Mickey doing now?" And it was like never what I was doing. It was a picture from like a million years ago, not even what I look like. And I was, it's when I first grew my beard, and I was really kind of like, you know, presenting Daddy Bear realness, and like that's not what they were gonna like do. So I had actually started doing a lot of modeling, which led to me having like a plus size modeling career. But I literally started out just saying like, hey, Instagram people, want to take pictures or whatever? And so people started doing photo shoots. I started doing all these photo shoots. And when I looked up the casting director, I realized that it was the same casting director that discovered me for my first movie, Bully.
Wow.
So I was like, you know what? I will message her. I feel comfortable. She's like a friend, you know? So her name is Carmen Cuba. And I was like, hey, Carmen, I was like, if you... I really like looking, even though I hadn't watched it yet. I was like, I really like looking, but if you ever need, like, you know, sexy bear, she's like, you never know. And I sent her all those pictures that I had been taking. Well, lo and behold, they were having the conversation. One of their biggest critiques from season one was that there was nobody of size on it. And so they were having that conversation already in the writer's room. And when it became her turn to speak about it, she was like, hey, what about Danny Franzese? And everyone was like, yeah, that'd be great. Like, it was like, there was no opposition. Everyone thought, what a great person to put in the show. And I mean, probably one of the, and so they thought about it more, and they had me screen test, because, you know, HBO executives had to say something too. And it was just me doing the scene. And then one of the creators took me out to breakfast. And he was like, I want to offer you this role. And he was like, and it's going to be, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. First of all, he's going to be a romantic lead, which I was just like, what?
Incredible.
Like, they're like, he's going to be pursued by one of the lead actors, Frankie J. Alvarez. And they were like, and he is going to be HIV positive, but he's never going to get sick. And it's going to be a big conversation about today's age of prevention and treatment with HIV, like where we are today about it. And Augustin, which is Frankie's character, is not only going to like him, but he's going to maybe like him because of it, because of the way he navigates life and handles his status and everything. And I was just like, wow, like what an opportunity, you know? And immediately I was like, I'll do nudity, I'll do sex scenes. Like, I was like, just so you know, like I'm willing to commit like so full into this, you know?
And
so
they were like, whoa, whoa, slow down. This is just the read through. Put your pants
back on. Yeah. So initially I was supposed to be on for limited episodes, but the first episode when we shot this scene where our characters meet and we go skinny dipping in the river, the Russian River up in upstate, Northern California. And our chemistry was so dope. He's such a fantastic actor and a great scene partner. And we were immediately comfortable and it just really worked. So they wrote me into the show as a permanent cast member, and it was so awesome. I mean, what an experience after feeling the gay glass ceiling in casting after I came, you know, before I came out. And you know, I didn't play any gay characters before I played Damien in Mean Girls, and then that's all I was getting offered, and most of them were derogatory towards gay people. Yeah. So it was like not something I wanted to do. So I had like a big, you know, good 6 years of like kind of flailing a little bit in my career and struggling, trying to find my footing and find myself as an artist. I didn't really do stand-up yet. I was like still finding myself, because it's interesting. My first agents were innovative artists, and then now I'm with them again. They're my agents now, and I'm with the same agents, and I'm like, you guys are like meeting me for the first time. Like, you met me as this scared, closeted, like inauthentic person. And now you're meeting the real Danny. Like, and so it was kind of a really amazing experience to go from a place where I felt like in my industry that I was scared of being found out as gay, to being a place where that was celebrated. 1 second while I get my acai bowl.
Yes, get your acai bowl.
And then hurry back, girl, because there's so much to unpack.
There is.
I have some things to say.
Me too.
Well, first of all, while Danny's getting his acai bowl, I think it's important to say, like, I love Queer as Folk. I still go back every year and I rewatch the entire series. I think it's so good. But the one complaint that I had about it, even back then, was that there wasn't a representation for anybody like me. Even, like, taking the plus size factor out of it, just look at the drag factor. The few times that they worked it into the show, it was done as more of a joke or a gacha kind of thing. And I really would like them to revisit that. They've been talking about rebooting Queer as Folk for a couple of years now. And I'd love for them to revisit that and kind of make it more inclusive for everybody.
Yeah, more modern and what's going on today.
All right, Danny, you're back. And I have a couple things I want to unpack from...
First, I want to unpack this bowl and show you... One of the options that I got for my acai bowl breakfast this morning was to get a regular bowl, a large bowl, or a pineapple bowl. And I said pineapple, but I did not know.
Oh my goodness, what? A real pineapple.
It's all in a pineapple.
That's kind of incredible, though. I love that.
For those who are just listening and not watching, because we are filming this, so this will be up on YouTube and our socials. Danny ordered an acai bowl, and it's actually packaged inside a real pineapple.
Like a hollow, it's like a bread bowl, but for healthy people.
That's really cool.
I love it. And you said that it's an, well, you call it an acai bowl, but you actually got the banana bowl.
Yeah, I got the banana bowl with peanut butter, so not interesting, but peanut butter, pineapple, strawberry, and
It is so interesting. You have no idea. I've been on keto for 2 months now, and I can't have any of that stuff. It has too much sugar.
I would eat it.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yummy.
Eat it slower and describe every taste.
I'll keep it buttery.
Now, one thing that I do really want to talk about is you are known mostly for playing Damien in Mean Girls. That was like your big break. It's what people still refer to you as. It's how people look at you and what they think about when they see your name. And I think that, like, even me, even knowing you, I just assumed at that time that you were out and proud and gay. And it wasn't until you and I got to know each other that I really heard more about your story and the fact that you were not out of the closet at that time. Like, that must have been really weird to be known for something like that. That you were trying to hide about yourself.
Yeah, I just thought you were big gay. I didn't know that you were closeted. That's crazy.
It was difficult because I wanted to show the range of things that I could do. I felt so limited right after Mean Girls about what they were letting me do. Like, I tested on Entourage for Turtle, and I had been up for The Sopranos, and I had gone up on all these other things that I think that I'm still right for. And once Mean Girls happened, that dried up. They wouldn't let me audition for things. Like, there was a role in the movie Sherry Baby with Maggie Gyllenhaal that one of my best friends, Bridget Barkin, was playing her sister, and they were looking for the husband. And it said, a lovable, doughy, blue-collar, big lug of a guy. And I was like, oh my God, that's me! Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let me audition. They're like, we're looking for a man's man. And they wouldn't let me audition. And the casting director was a lesbian.
Wow.
And I feel like I have just been constantly spooked, mostly by our brothers and sisters in the industry as gay and told that I couldn't do things that I know I can do. And so my whole mission was, there's people who haven't seen Mean Girls. I'll look different. I'll do something different. And that's why I played a rapist and I Spit in Your Grave. And I played all these other things that were like different because people didn't see Mean Girls and they were like, oh, this guy's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the movie's so popular, and the more popular the movie got, the more it was harder to get away from that. And then when we started dealing with actual equality issues, Obama became president, and things like marriage equality were now on the table. And it was like, it was his election that Prop 8 was voted no, after people were told that for the youngers, for our youngins, people were told they could get married. Everyone got married, and then it was taken away later on a national decision or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I was furious, and I was like, now it's important that I speak up. Now I see the importance. Hindsight's 2020. I didn't realize how important it was to be gay, and so I was living an out authentic life after that. And at that point, but it didn't matter because I didn't have any. Like, anybody in the gay community embraced me. I was never an outer advocate. I was never at the GLAAD Awards. I didn't do anything queer. And surprisingly, and something I'll give them so much credit for, it is World of Wonder. I had worked with them on Party Monster. Theron and all of them knew I was gay, and they knew I was closeted, and they still like kept me involved. I was able to do things with them. They loved me no matter what. They loved me for me, not even for my sexuality. Even someone who's a company that was so pro-queer, you would think that they would think I was some kind of faker or a hater. They understood what the industry was like and still stood by me, which is why I'll always go to the wall defending them when people say that they have, you know, gender issues or other problems within the company. I feel like when you really know them, you can see. Yeah. I mean, that was the one place I could go to be safe. I didn't go to gay clubs. I went to World of Wonder parties. Yeah. And that was where I could maybe meet a guy or like talk to other queer people or the artists and, you know, personally, like either come out to them or become friends or whatever. But I was able to be a part of my tribe through World of Wonder. And that's why I always respect them. And I will literally do anything they say when they ask. But awesome. At that time, it was very difficult navigating all of that. We have so many shows right now where things are gay. I mean, I just saw that there's a trans actress on the new Saved by the Bell. Like,
and she is sickening. She is gorgeous.
Yes.
Okay, so I have to go on just a little bit of
Josie Tsai, let's talk about her. I love her.
Did you watch the new Saved by the Bell?
I'm in the middle of it. I love it.
It is so good.
Where can I watch it?
It's on Peacock.
I don't know what that is.
It's the NBC app.
Oh, is it free?
Yeah. No, girl, just do what I do. You just go on.
Peacock's free. Peacock is free.
It is free.
Okay. Oh, it wasn't for me, but I got it free for a week.
No, it's free, but it's you pay if you want to get rid of commercials.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't like commercials.
It's like $99 for the year and you get no commercials.
So I sat down and I was like, I'm a huge Saved by the Bell fan. That was my childhood. I've been waiting for a reboot, but also really skeptical of how it would go. And I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, Josie Tsai is the trans actress that she is the Kelly Kapowski. And I was so afraid of how they were going to treat that character because I didn't want it to become another sad story that has been told over and over again. It's like, yes, we know that side of the journey, but I want to see somebody that's really celebrated. Bitch, she is sickening. She is head cheerleader. All the boys on the football team are after her.
I have to say that this is the best rendition of Saved by the Bell ever. They perfected it.
It is
the conversation is about race and equality. Like they make fun of how rich and privileged everyone at Bayside is, and the inner city kids have to kind of move into the school. That's the whole plot. And so it's a very mixed, diverse cast, also gifted, also talented, all such good actors. Mm-hmm. And then her character, she's kind of like Jazz. It's like becoming Jazz. She had like a reality show and she's already rich and famous. So it's like her character's on that. She had a reality show and everything. I love it. I think this was not the world that I grew up in. You know, this was not that thing. So to be Damien and be in the opposite of that kind of a world, they didn't see a future for me. Even now as a stand-up, I try to encourage young stand-ups because we've never had a gay male, like a gay cis male headliner.
Yeah.
Who can like sell out like an arena. I mean, we've had everyone from Eddie Izzard, who's like genderqueer, to like, we have lesbians, you know.
Louis Anderson, maybe it was the closest we got.
But he wasn't really out at the time.
I don't think he is out now, is he?
I mean, he's kind of like an open secret, I guess.
But yeah, I feel like he has addressed it and not denied the rumors, but I don't think he's ever actually just come out and said, I am a homosexual male.
Speaking of that, there is a book called Open Secret that I had read about being queer in Hollywood and how to navigate it and what it was like for people. And that is how I saw myself, as an open secret. I think people knew that I was gay, like you just assumed, but not saying that you're gay and saying you are gay are two different things.
Yes.
And back in the day, it meant persecution and firing. It still sometimes means that, if you know what I mean, like, you know, with certain things, but at the same time, being gay was just the act of defiance of just being ultimately who you are and being fully authentic is a political act. And it is something that I live my life as right now. And I'm so happy being in this space. You know, now I've written for Advocate and I've been in Out 100 and I've, you know, the community has embraced me and I've embraced them back. You know, I will I don't even charge my full rate half the times when it comes to like little queer communities or clubs or things like that, because my people need the entertainment and need me in it.
And they need the representation.
Like, just like if you're listening right now, we need you. So like whatever your gift is, whatever somebody made fun of you for, whatever anyone ever told you that you couldn't do this or do entertainment because of that reason, when they tell you you're too fat, you're too gay, you're too femme, you're too butch, you're too whatever, those are your signifiers. Those are the reasons I cast fucking checks. And it's like about trying to find a way to take your pain point and turn it into a paid point.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. You should put that on a t-shirt.
You need to.
That's gonna be my book, girl. That's gonna be my book. I'm gonna put it in a book because I have to start sharing this knowledge. You know, my generation, the generation before us, like my parents' generation, the boomers, like there are very little gay boomers because they died. Like we lost so many people. And let me tell you something. Going back to our conversation about looking and playing an HIV positive character, Eddie was the first HIV positive character that I played, was the first HIV positive character on television for 6 years. There was a gap. And before that was Gloria Rubin on ER. And we've done variety roundtables about this. And I'm an ambassador now for Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation, who with GLAAD asked me to present the media playbook on HIV and AIDS to MSNBC. They made this big Bible of how to handle conversations. You don't say HIV virus because the V means virus. So that's like saying like ATM machine, you know? And so they're like, giving me all of these things. So I had Ross Murray, who is a deacon, but also is at GLAAD as the person who media trains everyone. Media trained me for hours, like 4.5-5 hours on everything that someone would need to know about HIV and AIDS in this current age of prevention and treatment. And talk about getting woke. I literally downloaded the file of all of the current information of what's happening. And you can't go back from that. Once you learn all of that stuff, so our generation, we lost a generation and a half of queer people that were meant to teach us how to be queer and teach us the stories of how to do the things and mentor us and hire us because we're gay and love us because we're gay and write gay literature and make gay movies, and we lost that. So it's our generation's time and the generation that can listen to my voice while I'm alive on this earth to help fill that space by working double time. So yeah, I'll have to write books. Even though maybe I'm too lazy, but I have to do it.
You put it, make a book on tape.
Yeah. You love to talk.
Whatever it is we have to do, we have to do whatever we can to leave this information behind, because
I agree with you.
We're missing 100%. A huge gap.
Well, and I've had this conversation recently, and I'm sure all of us can agree. Like, we get the fan mail, we get all those comments and the letters from the kids that are like us, that identify with us,
right,
who see something of themselves in us.
Yeah.
And I was sitting and thinking about it one day, and I was talking to my husband, and I was like, you know, I didn't really have a me when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of figure it out for myself. And if I can be that, it sounds so cliche, but that beacon of light for anybody out there that is like me, if I can show them that you can be successful and quote unquote normal and happy and all of those things, I'm okay going through the shit that I went through if it can make their life a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, Danny, your story is amazing. I encourage people to read more up on you. There's some, I was going through your wiki just so I was familiar with stuff. There's so much information of like where you come from, your humble beginnings with your mom, and I just want people to look you up, follow you on social media. You have a lot going on. Is there anything you want to plug before we go?
I do have a podcast. Ross Murray, who I mentioned earlier from GLAAD, is now, we met that way from him media training me, but he's now the producer of our show, and it's called Yas Jesus.
Yeah,
and it is a podcast that explores the intersectionality between queer sexuality and Christian spirituality. Because there is a place in God's house for everybody. And I think that people are meant to choose between gay and God when they come out. And I went through conversion therapy and had a crazy experience with that. All of that's on the podcast. So please.
And I was on the podcast.
And you were on the podcast, Ginger.
I did it.
The friend of the pod.
Well, thank you. Everybody go listen to his pod. Thank you again so much for being on.
God bless y'all. And I hope to see you soon. And I can't wait for the world to be open again, Trinity, so we can have your pageant.
Like, yes, and have Dan. You judge. And have you judge. Well, thank you, Danny. I hope you have a great day and have fun while you're at the pool.
Thank you. God bless you.
I love you, brother.
Love you. Mwah.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.